and Services Committee to order, and just so the committee knows, our Wednesday agenda is incredibly aggressive, and we will probably be going into the evening, so for Wednesday.
And starting at 8:30 in the morning, going straight through.
Probably not. I think we do have the room Wednesday evening, so we will recess in the morning and then reconvene at 5. So, in my attempt to try to comply with the schedule that the speaker has set forth, I kind of figured that you guys would rather meet Wednesday evening rather than Friday evening. So, good call. It's amazing how I can pick up on these things. Anyway, just so you'll know, if you have plans for Wednesday evening, I would respectfully request that.
Was that 5:30?
5 o'clock. 5.
Okay.
The earlier we start, the earlier we get done, theoretically. Okay, yes, and we are not going to go to work session today on 3156, but I'm going to open a work session on 2939, and I would like for Dale Panner and Grant Higginson to come up and kind of explain the threes and the areas that adjustments still need to be made.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dale Penn, and I'm representing the District Attorney Association, Chiefs of Police, and Oregon Narcotics Association, Enforcement Association. On the dash threes, if I could speak to section three, which is pages 1 and 2, and then section five, which is on 2 and 3. The Medical Marijuana Act, it provides several different things. It says that there's an exemption from criminal enforcement of the marijuana laws. And then there's an affirmative defense that's also in the law. And so when the original bill came forward, it removed 475.316 sub 1 E and F. And this greatly changed the intent of the law. And so the dash threes were intended to put that meaning of E and F back into the law. And the difficulty is when you look at E and F, they are confusing, the language. So legislative council said, let's make it very specific. And to make this complete so that the statute makes sense, we need to have it not only in the exemption part of the statute, which is section 3 on pages 2 and 3, but also in the affirmative defense section, which is section 5 in the dash 3s, pages 2 and 3. And so that's why you have this other language. And it just basically says that you have one grow at a location that's registered. You don't have multiple grows, because that's the enforcement problem that would come forward, that someone would say, well, I'm growing for 20 patients. That's why I have 250 plants here. That's the problem that was not allowed under the original bill and what we're trying to make clear in this bill. I think the controversial part of the dash threes is on page 2, and this is a totally different subject matter, page 2, line 15. And this is the issue that is in the original bill that would allow the department to revoke a card from someone when they have been convicted of a narcotics offense. The language in the draft threes says shall. The department shall revoke. And we are supportive of changing that word to may to give discretion to the department. That's consistent with our testimony at your last hearing. And I would be supportive of the committee changing that word to may.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there the sideboards on here, is there a time limit? Somebody convicted of this 30 years ago, last week?
Mr. Chair and Representative Tomei, it's my understanding, and Mr. Higginson, or Dr. Higginson could speak to this, is that the department for this type of discretion would adopt rules and would utilize those rules in judging their discretion here.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson. I'm the State Public Health Officer with the Department of Human Services. And as you recall, when I testified the first time, we as a program wanted to clean some things up because we have been given information either from the attending physician or from the law enforcement justice side that we're very uncomfortable being able to do absolutely nothing with. And one of the issues has been those people who have either an extensive past criminal history of narcotic-related offenses, or those people that right now we can do nothing in the way of suspending or revoking their cards. And then in the case of people who are convicted for a drug-related offense while they are on the medical marijuana program, they can be suspended for 6 months, but then after that time they can reapply and we would have to give them a card back. So what we were hoping to do with the original amendments that we had submitted was give us the ability for us to be able to do something about the person's either permanent or longer than 6 month revocation or suspension if we were given sufficient information that there really was a problem with criminal history here. Mm-hmm. And the, right now there are no sidebars on the our ability to do this, and we would be very happy to work with a broad based work group to come up with rules that would put some of those sidebars on. But having us to have the discretion to be able to deal with those cases is something that the program thinks is important.
Follow up. My concern is, of course, that somebody could have had a violation in the 60s, and you could still revoke their license, right?
Mr. Chair and Representative Tomei, that is correct right now, and that clearly is not our intention. Our intention is only to do that kind of thing, a permanent revocation, when there is severe and documented abuse of the law.
I understand that, too, but you will be changing this, as I understand. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, I could see two ways to do it. One would be to try to work and amend this so that there are some sidebars put in the statute. The other way would be to do that through administrative rules. And if this does pass as is, that we will make a commitment to, like I said, work with a broad-based group to come up with those sidebars and those restrictions in administrative rules. So I can see doing it either way.
Thank you.
And we had discussions about the appropriateness of attempting to do that in statute as opposed to administrative rule. Where I came down on was on the side of doing it in rule, so it has the flexibility necessary to adjust. If we try to do that in statute and we have missed the mark, we're 2 years out before we can make adjustments. So,
in addition, Mr. Chair, you also have the testimony of the administrator saying that that's the intent and mm-hmm. that's the way that they would attempt to draft those rules. So I think that there's protection there.
Yeah, and Dr. Higginson and I had that conversation, and I have every comfort that will be addressed by the department.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westland.
In the line 15, actually line 17, what is ORS 475-992-1A, B, or C?
Mr. Chair and Representative Westland, I'm gonna guess at this one, but 992 is the penalty section, and I believe these are the different possession, sale, and manufacturing of narcotics, and this would be the classification for the different drug offenses of growing, selling, or possessing more than an ounce of marijuana.
There we go.
Person 5992.
Because what I'm trying to get at is, it's my impression, my understanding, these are fairly serious offenses.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westland, yes, these would all be felony offenses, ranging from C felonies to A felonies. Unlawful for any person to manufacture or deliver a controlled substance. Any person who violates this subsection with respect to a controlled substance in Schedule 1, and that's a Schedule 1 narcotic, which marijuana is.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Westman.
Is guilty of a Class A felony. B, a controlled substance in Schedule 2 is guilty of a Class B felony. What's the Schedule 2? Mr. Chair, I'm Representative Westland. Cocaine and methamphetamine are the primary drugs that are in Schedule 2 that we see abused. Heroin and marijuana are primarily the Schedule 1 drugs that you see abused in Oregon.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Westland, if I could add, Schedule 1 are supposed to be drugs that have no Schedule 1 is supposed to be drugs that have no medicinal value. Schedule 2 does have medicinal value, but they still are narcotics and therefore controlled substance.
Well, and that's a federal schedule. It's something that's beyond our control.
Schedule 3, yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Westland, it goes down. There are four schedules, all of which drugs that are controlled and can only be prescribed by a prescribing physician or nurse practitioner.
So, I mean, this is functionally commercially raising or delivering for sales. That's how I'm reading this.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair and Representative Westland, yes. And again, just to verify, this is a federal listing of narcotics that are illegal throughout the United States. And they are ranked by the board and I can't remember the title of the board in D.C., Washington, D.C., that does this, but they're looking at the impact of this narcotic, how strong it is, does it have legitimate medical uses or not, and that's how the drug receives a ranking. Typically in Oregon, the primary narcotics enforcement offenses that we are engaged in usually are Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs. We rarely have cases involving Schedule 3.
Representative Westland.
Dale, I'm concerned about the grow location being printed on the card. Is there another better way to do that? I mean, I don't have a problem with some, you know, identification of where the site is, but we heard pretty good testimony. I mean, someone lifts your wallet. I mean, you got your credit card in it. You got your marijuana card. You got your driver's license. You got, I mean, it's just neon arrows pointed to where that individual has his grow location. Is there a compelling reason to have it on the card?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Westland, I think that law enforcement is very much in favor of having it on the card, just for identification purposes, so that we don't have floating grows, that you don't have 10 grows, because you don't have to list an address. So that's one difficulty of one way it can be abused. Now,
I understand the reasoning to have an identified grow site. My question is, does it have to be on the card?
Yeah. And Mr. Chair and Representative Westland, the other issue about this card that's very unique is it's not required that you carry the card. And so it's good enough for someone to say, I don't know that I would carry one of these cards in my wallet. That wouldn't be good practice, number one. Now, if I am carrying marijuana with me, and I'm allowed to possess marijuana, an ounce of marijuana, with my card in any place I want to be, well, then I'm going to carry my card with me. That would be good practice. But even if I don't, under this statute, you're exempted from prosecution if you have a card. And so practice is, what we advise law enforcement is, you stop somebody, you come across them, they have an ounce of marijuana, and they're telling you that they have a card. First of all, we tell the officer, you ask. Because you don't have an obligation to tell the officer that you have a card. You ask. And when someone tells you you have a card, then we make an effort to contact the department to determine, does this person really have a card? So it isn't...
The health department.
Yes. There isn't an obligation to carry the card with you. I think that might be a wise practice when I'm carrying marijuana. But all of those reasons, enforcement of having it documented and on the card, the idea that you really don't need to take your card with you so you can protect it, the only time you need to have that card with you that would be helpful to you is when you're actually possessing marijuana.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Westland, if I might add, right now the address of the patient or the caregiver is required to be on the card, and then these amendments would require the grow site to be as well. And the issue is really one of operational. None of that information would need to be on the card if we could verify for police 24 hours a day that indeed that is the correct address of either the patient or the grow site. But since we're only open 8 hours a day, Monday through Friday, there are long periods of time when police law enforcement would like to have that information but cannot get it from us, and consequently I think that's one of the reasons that they want to have that on the card.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
I share the concerns of Representative Westland. Would it be possible to have it somewhere on a website or somewhere, some information that would be available to law enforcement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, that was something that was discussed when we were originally developing the rules for the medical marijuana program. The advocates were very concerned that if there was information that was simply open to law enforcement, that there was a potential for abuse there, and that's the reason that it was not done that way. That is something that we can revisit, but I mean we would want to make sure that there are those safeguards so that their law enforcement is only accessing that information that they're legally able to access.
And I guess from my perspective, a secure website is kind of not something that exists in the real world. And the security of having it on the card rather than on the internet, I think is a lot higher level of security.
But certainly there is information available to law enforcement that is not available to the public.
The point is you have a website. You have some place on the internet where law enforcement can access it. Somebody's going to hack into it. We have yet to develop a website that's secure, because hackers are as smart as the people that are doing, we've got agencies that spend all their time revamping websites for security reasons, and they continue to be violated. So, that's just the reality of technology. And I say that, and I also need to clarify the fact that there's no way in the world I could ever hack into a website, because I don't know enough to do that. But so,
Mr. Chair,
yeah,
I have a question about agitation due to Alzheimer's. That
yes.
Apparently is cut out of this bill.
Yes.
Is that correct? Are we going to address why that is?
That was some people in this building had some concern with expanding the list in statute. It does not in any way impact what the department has done by rule. Those people who have agitated Alzheimer's, and I think currently there's two.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
There's two. Will not be affected by excluding this from the language. The department has the authority to expand the list by rule, that we don't need to do it in statute. Any other questions? The chair would entertain a motion on the dash one amendment, which was the first one that came to us.
Where's dash one?
Well, it's in your file. There should be. Here's the dash one.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I might, the dash ones are the amendments that the department, Grant Higginson, spoke to, and one, they're outlined in his testimony. Two, you should have an LC draft dated March 20th, 03.
That was hand-engrossed then.
And it was hand-engrossed on for our March meeting.
And there, in committee, there are two places in this legislation where we want to change shall to may. One of those is already addressed in the dash one.
What line is that on the dash one, Mr. Chair?
That would be the dash one amendment. It's page two, line two, where it makes reference to page five, line 34 in the bill, where it says delete shall and insert may. The other shall we will have to, are in the dash threes, and we'll have to do that conceptually. But we need to do the dash ones first. Are we catching up here?
Do you need the one?
Pardon?
Do all the members have the dash one?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I do.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones into House Bill 2939.
Representative Westland moves the dash one amendment into House Bill 2939. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections to the dash ones? Seeing none, the dash ones are adopted. Okay, committee, what we need to do now is adopt the dash threes, and after we've done that, we will conceptually amend them to eliminate the shall. So I would entertain a motion on the dash threes. Representative Westland.
Mr. Chair, do you want to adopt? What do you want to do?
What we need to do is adopt the dash threes, and once they are viable, then we will conceptually amend them.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash three amendment to 2939.
Representative Westland moves adoption of the dash three amendment to House Bill 2939. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash threes are adopted, and at this point we need a motion to suspend the rules for the purpose of conceptually amending.
So moved.
Representative Anderson moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of conceptually amending the dash three amendments. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. Representative Anderson, you want to make the motion on the conceptual amendment, which would be
to change the shell to may.
Yes. Representative Anderson moves that we conceptually amend the dash three amendments by changing on page 2, line 15, the word shell to may. Is there any discussion on that conceptual amendment? Are there any objections to that conceptual amendment? Seeing none, the dash three amendments are conceptually amended. So, colleagues, what we have now is a bill that we have adopted the dash one amendment, the dash three amendment as conceptually amended into House Bill 2939. And so now we have an amended and conceptually amended bill that we need to move.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be voting no on this bill. I just have received dozens of letters and emails opposing this bill, and I have enough concerns myself about it that I will be voting no on this.
Okay. Well, thank you, but we don't have a motion on the bill yet.
Okay. You're not going to get one from me.
I kind of had that feeling. But I would like one.
Mr. Chair, I am very much in favor of the bill as it stands. I guess if I could go back and... Because it is...
Representative Anderson, could you make a motion on the bill first before we...
I move that the House Bill 2939 be moved to the floor for the Ducasse recommendation.
Okay, Representative Anderson moves House Bill 2939 as amended and conceptually amended to the floor with the Ducasse recommendation. Now, Representative Anderson, we can have discussion.
I do like the major points of the bill. I think they're reasonable to law enforcement. They're reasonable to the medical community. Because this is a restricted medication, I think at some time in the future we're going to have to look at this like we do pretty much all of the medication, where it's grown commercially under licensed agreements or some way that we can protect and that this medication would be available to patients for use, like heroin, like any of the other restricted medications, but under quality control conditions, and then anybody that's growing it or using it outside, that becomes their problem, and it does become an offense in a much more clearly defined way. Since I have a very close friend and also a very vocal opponent to the bill as it is now, I would be happy to carry it to the floor, but I'd prefer not being the carrier on the floor.
I can understand that. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I think it needs to be clarified. I mean, my greatest concern was that if we had a felon who truly was ill and needed marijuana for medicinal purposes only, that person would be allowed to have it. And I feel confident that in the rulemaking, this will be taken care of.
And Representative Westland.
Mr. Chair, I'm still concerned. I just think there's a better way. I don't know what it is in terms of the identification or of the location of the grow site on the card. I don't have a better solution for you as we sit here today, but I look forward to working with you, assuming this bill passes and we get it across the floor. I look forward to working with you on the Senate side to identify that methodology that protects the card carrier's location as well as gives law enforcement the tools they need during that period of time when Grant Shop isn't open.
Any other discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Barker.
Excused.
Representative Belto.
Aye.
Representative Monson.
Aye.
No.
All right. House Bill 2939, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair will carry. God only knows why, but he will. Yeah, it should be a lively discussion on the floor. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 2939. Thank you, everybody, for everything, I guess, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3431, right? No?
No,
3122, excuse me. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3122 is extending the moratorium on licensing of residential care facilities to June 30th, 2007. It declares an emergency effective upon passage. You have attached to your summary the -2 amendments that modifies the moratorium date, changing it from 2007 to 2005, and it also is exempting and creating some options for residential care facilities in underserved areas for minimal expansion.
And colleagues, the -2s replace the -1s. So we have some folks who can explain this if we need explanation. Who needs explanation?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Tomei.
Where does it extend the date to 05?
You mean reduce the date? Page on the dash two amendments, page two.
I see it.
Line 11.
Got it. Thank you.
And I believe everybody involved is supportive of the dash twos, so relatively self-explanatory. But I'll give you the chance. We've got all sorts of folks who are we've made sit in the audience, and which I kind of like. But
Andy,
sir,
on the dash two.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash ones never were distributed. They were printed, and then they needed some further corrections, so the dash twos did replace them.
So I spoke to something that I'm the only one that has a copy of.
Right. Okay.
Well, you do? You got the
yeah.
ones? Okay.
Well, and actually, so do I, but we never talked about them. So the dash two are the active ones.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Yes, I have a question. I want to make sure. I know we passed the destination resort bill that.
The destination.
Destination resort bill last week. And if there was a conflict. With and that addressed long-term care facilities, if in this bill it would allow leeway for his bill. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Jim. Explain that one.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mona Sanderson, for the record, Jim Carlson, representing the Oregon Healthcare Association. The Destination Resort Bill deals primarily with definitions and the formula, I guess, for the overnight lodging, and it would allow assisted living residential care facilities to be considered within that formula. When I talked with the proponents of that bill before they introduced it, I made them aware of the existing moratorium for new licenses and said it was likely would be extended probably at least 24 months. They do not have, according to the conversations I had, any immediate plans in the next 24 months. They're looking more long-term on the planning of their communities, their destination resorts. So I do not believe there would be certainly any legal conflict. And then I think our expectation on this moratorium is that it is going to go away at some point in time here in the next 24 months or 48 months.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I was just asking if there was anybody in the audience who's opposed to the bill, but apparently that's...
Is there anybody opposed? There you go.
Mr.
Okay.
Chair, I move House Bill 3122 to the floor with the due time. Had you opened the...
Could we do the dash T's first, please?
Oh, that's right. I move the dash 2 amendments to 3122.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 3122. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash two amendments are adopted. Now.
Now I'll move 3122 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves House Bill 3122 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Court, call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Barker.
Excused.
Representative Dolto.
Aye.
Representative Sanderson.
Aye.
Representative
Tomei. Aye.
Representative Weston.
Aye.
Chair Cruz.
Aye. House Bill 3122, having received the constitutional majority, do we want it on the floor or on consent?
I think go on consent, don't you?
Okay. Representative Tomei moves House Bill 3122 be placed on the consent calendar. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And House Bill 3122, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Thank you all for being here. And we will close the work session on 3122 and open a work session on 3431. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3431 is before us again. We had a hearing on at the end of March. This one is permitting the insurance carriers offering individual health benefit plans to limit the individual health benefit plan in which the individual may elect to enroll, makes the individual who was denied coverage under the initial plan eligible to apply for coverage under the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, which is OMIP. We have a dash one amendment that was at the request of the IPGB Insurance Pool Governing Board. Just for clarification purposes, they wanted it to be clear for the for IPGB to have clarity in the existing definition of adverse underwriting decision. Thus, you have the dash one amendments in front of you, and that is their language in sub E on page 1, line 15. And the parties have seen the amendment, and they are in support of it. And actually, somebody from the board is here if we need additional explanation.
Questions? I think this is a very fine piece of work.
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to 3431.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 3431. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash one amendment is adopted.
And, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3431. Do I go to the floor and then to Ways and Means?
Oh, you're right.
Yes.
To the floor.
With a subsequent referral.
With a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. With a due pass. You have to have that in it. With a due pass recommended.
I'm not sure why this is going to Ways and Means. No,
why? That's what I wondered.
Why does this have to go to Ways and Means?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, it's going there because it's referred by prior reference from the Speaker's office.
That's a good reason, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You know, which is...
If you want to rescind it, but I don't know.
What will it
When could we reasonably expect... something from LFO on this.
Since I give them the amendments, probably by the end of tomorrow.
I could withdraw my motion until we get...
You know, this... the committee, I think... I would like to get fiscal on this. Now that we've amended the bill. So I think what we will do is we've adopted the amendment, and I think we'll let it ride at the way it is, get an opinion from LFO, and send it to the floor if there is no fiscal on it. My fear is the fact that there's a lot of bills in Ways and Means, and I would hate to see this one get trapped. So we will reschedule this bill for Wednesday, and hopefully we will have something from LFO at that point in time. But we did need to amend the bill so we can get an accurate read from LFO.
And you need to withdraw the motion.
Yeah, and Representative Mona Sanderson withdraws her motion to send it to the floor. And so we have an amended bill that we can get a read on, and we will let it go.
I think you need to suspend the rules.
To do what?
To withdraw the motion.
No, not if the maker of the motion withdraws it. You don't need to.
Can I withdraw? Mm-hmm. But you can suspend the rules if you want to.
Actually, I can just close the work session, and I can do that with a motion on the table. So.
That's fair.
Yeah, so I'm going to close the work session on 3431. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3011. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3011 is expanding the nursing services program to include higher education loan repayment for nurses who receive graduate degrees and teach in nursing programs. It appropriates monies from the general fund to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission for nursing services account for purposes of loan repayment, declares an emergency, and has an effective date of July 1, 2003. And I think you all know it will go to Ways and Means.
Yeah, and it's going to be a problematic bill to get through this committee because only four of the members of this committee are signers on the bill, so which is a bare majority, don't you know? Let's. I'd like to have Representative Mona Sanderson, Joe Bell, and Brian come up and speak to this, just for the comfort of the committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for hearing the next five bills. They all have to do with the health care personnel shortage that we have in the state. And I want you to know that all of these bills came from the ideas came from a variety of sources. And I just wanted to mention all of them. One is the Interim Task Force on Healthcare Personnel, which I was a member. And recommendations came out of that. Also, the Oregon Nurses League Council put out a plan, Solutions to Oregon's Nursing Shortage. There is also the Healthcare Sector Employment Initiative, which is a project of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, and I'm not sure if Sandy gave you copies of all of that. So all of these bills are sort of what we have worked up, and which can really address our unemployment rate. We have the highest in the nation, yet we have a critical shortfall in workers in the healthcare arena. House Bill 30, let me get this bill out, then 3011 and 3012 are very similar. One asks for money and the other doesn't. And so I think that ONA may not like the one that does not ask for money, but I wanted to make sure that those nurses who want to become nurse educators have the opportunity to have a loan forgiveness program. And that's what 3011 does. It asks for $200,000 to be put into the nursing account. Let me see if... I don't have a copy of my testimony, so...
You want one?
Yeah.
It's really short.
For any of my bills, for some reason. I gave them all away. Thank you. So basically, this will allow a nurse who obtains a master's or doctorate degree in nursing to have their loans forgiven, just like all the nurses under the nursing services program. And it does put $200,000 into the nursing services account. And that's basically all I have to say to it.
Brian?
For the record, Brian Black, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. Despite what Representative Mona Sanderson indicated, we're not opposed to one or the other.
Oh,
we're
good.
Supportive of both bills. But with that caveat, let me indicate the situation we're in. There is currently a nursing services program in the state. Some of you are familiar with it. It was established, I'm trying to remember, Representative Westland was involved in it, and as was Representative Cruz. Initially, I believe about 8 to 10 years ago, and that program in itself started out as a program in which you gave loans up front to nursing students, and as they then had graduated, they agreed to work in rural areas of the state, and if they did work in that, they got loan forgiveness. If they didn't work in those areas, then they had to pay back the scholarship up or the loans up front. Subsequent to that, I believe it was last session, we changed that program so it more closely reflects another loan forgiveness program that we have in the state, which is you wait until after somebody has, in fact, graduated, and then they are actually out in the rural area, and then they qualify for some loans that they've taken out or obligations they've taken out through some other money sources, and you pay back in those loans. Basically, if it's a four-year program, you pay back a quarter of that loan over each of the 4 years that they agree to work in those areas. That program and that shift was actually a very good shift. We're finding much more high compliance. Obviously, it's a better way to make sure that you've got the fit, you've got them out there, and then you're paying it after the fact than having the money come up front and then a student after they graduate say, by the way, I'm not going to go to, you know, to Condon, and then the money's wasted during that time period, gets paid back, and it gets recaptured, but it creates a problem. With that said, I guess the next thing I'd say is the current status of the program is that we were notified within the last 2 weeks that the allocation of dollars for this program for this coming year has been suspended. And so we have a whole variety of applicants for the existing program, and right now we don't know what the status of those dollars are. So that may be part of the comment by Representative Montes Anderson, is that ONA may be against the one bill because it has a funding mechanism. And, well, actually, we're for both bills, but we think the existing program obviously needs to be funded. And if there's an expansion of that program to include what 3012 or 3011 and 3012 do, which is expands it to graduate programs with a specific intent of doing the nursing educator piece, then we need to look very closely that we're funding that mechanism and not just stealing from the existing dollars. I sat along with Joe Bell on the screening group of the applicants for that, and we had, my recollection is, almost 200 applicants for the last go-around, and I think we gave out 9 scholarships. And the pile, the paperwork we went through, was about 4 to 6 inches high of these applicants. They're asked very specific things. This group currently that screens this screens it for what is the highest priority at the current time. And this last go-around, it was home health agencies and long-term care. Not to say that we don't have a substantial shortage, and you'll hear later in the testimony on another bill about the nursing shortage in itself, but it is very, very acute in the state and is only going to get worse. So we're trying to plug some very minor little holes by having 9 people in this program when we have 200 applicants for this program to go into rural areas, go into some of our really acute needs. With that said, I would say that ONA obviously is supportive of both of these bills and would hope that either if there's new revenue available or with the existing revenue, that you put the nursing shortage very high on your priority list this session, not just for the health care of Oregon, but actually for economic development. There are jobs waiting out there that generate tax dollars that we can use right now, and we just don't have the bodies to put into those slots to generate those dollars. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe?
For the record, I'm Joe Bell with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and I just want to indicate that we are supportive of House Bills 3011 and 3012. We are particularly supportive of 3012, the one without the money. We would like to see the program funded as it is currently, but we have a general position this session that we will not support additional funding. The one thing that I did want to bring forth on this is that we've been talking about the nursing shortages a lot in this building and in the last few years. But one of the things I think that is really critical and that really leads into needing to provide this nursing services program for the graduate degree programs is that the average age of the nurse in Oregon, according to all the studies, is in the mid-40s. But the average age for the instructor, the nursing instructor, is in the mid-50s. And we're seeing a lot of them retire, and they have not been replaced. And so we really need to focus on that particular area. And we feel that this is one of the shortage areas that should be addressed by the nursing services program. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you all very much.
I think there's probably a list somewhere, and I have no idea where it is.
There's no one else.
There's no one else?
Okay. We will stand at ease until the chair gets back.
reconvene the committee, and colleagues, we're still in a work session on House Bill 3011.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3011 to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means and a due pass recommendation.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves House Bill 3011 to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson. Aye.
Representative Barker.
Excused.
Representative
Belton. Aye.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Aye.
Representative
Tomei. Aye. Representative Weston. Excused. Aye. House Bill 3011, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Yes, and I'll close the work session on 3011 and open a work session on House Bill 3012.
Do I go back up there?
You can do it either way you want,
okay.
Representative.
Basically, 3012 uses the existing nursing account funds that have been allocated, which Brian DeLashman said the money's been suspended, but basically it would put those nurses who want to become nurse educators into the same pool with all the other nurses. So that's what 3012 does.
Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Yeah, Representative Monis Anderson, there is no money attached to this one.
That no, it's in the existing account as it is.
Okay.
But it does have a subsequent referral, nonetheless. So, I entertain a motion.
I move House Bill 3012 to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means and a due pass.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves House Bill 3012 to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. So, any discussion? I'm going to wait for a minute for discussion, even though there isn't going to be any. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Barker.
Excused.
Representative
Belton.
Aye.
Representative
Monson.
Aye.
Representative Aye. Excused. Aye. House Bill 3012, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 3012 and open the work session on House Bill 3603. Senator Nelson, you can come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before your committee and want to thank the members of the committee also. This bill is really the same bill as we passed in the Senate, and it recognizes the shortage of nurses that we are going to be experiencing in the state, and it sets forth a procedure by which we can address that shortage. It takes into consideration the fact we don't have any money, and I appreciate the work that the House has done with the taxing issues and the things that you have to struggle with. What we want to do with this bill is to set in motion a procedure by which we can address the shortage of nurses. Realize the fact that we don't have the money to do it, basically, right now. There might be other sources in which to do it. It's been a work group that's been working really since the start of session. Representative Mona Sanderson has been very helpful in that. I've had my wife, Alice, who is also a registered nurse, be involved with that. You've had Oregon Health Science University, the Nurses Association, community colleges. I don't know, who else have I left out?
Just the AFL-CIO. The hospital.
The hospitals. We have gotten a group together, a huge group of people, to address this, and they've come to the realization, and I think everybody knew this, is that there is a shortage, and how are we going to address the problem? And so they have come up with the plan, and Representative Mona Sanderson has a much better in-depth knowledge of that than I do. I just know that these people work very hard and have come up with something I think can really work, and I appreciate the committee's attention. And with that, I appreciate the work group, the thing they've done, and I will just, with that, turn it over to Representative Mona Sanderson, and I will slip away to another committee. But I'm very supportive of this bill.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate your time.
The way it came about, when I was talking with OHSU and ONA getting
getting ideas. They were saying, well, Senator Nelson also wants to address this issue. So it was really fun to be able to work with Senator Nelson and his wife, Alice, on
dating.
Yeah. You know that more nurses in the Oregon workforce means more jobs. Oh, and I am Lori Monis Anderson, state representative from District 50, which is Gresham. More nurses is going to have more jobs that pay high wages, and this bill is going to really help improve the economy. It directly, right now, the shortage has really created a significant strain in our healthcare system. And it's so nice to have all of these interim groups working on these issues, but so many times we'll have the interim work forces and task forces, and we're not really doing anything with their recommendations. And this bill really is an attempt to do that. Basically, what the bill does is it awards grants to institutions that will expand the capacity of our nursing education program. And I think you'll say, well, we don't have any money, Lori, but this is going to set up the framework. We have to realize that the federal government has also talked about having federal monies address the health care workforce shortage also. And what this bill does is it will set that structure into place. You will see the Dash 1 amendments, and basically that makes this bill a mirror image of Senate Bill 800, which passed unanimously on the Senate side. The focus of the focus, we hope, of these collaborative efforts to address the workforce shortage will be developing regional learning laboratories, providing technical support to nursing education, creating learning materials that supplement available facility expertise, and also utilizing distance learning technology. We have had several meetings, or actually two main meetings, well, I think we've had three meetings, trying to get this bill acceptable to everyone. The community colleges, as you know, have nursing training programs. OHSU has nursing training programs, and private university also have nursing training programs. And this is an attempt to get everyone at the table. Oregon Nursing Leadership Council has brought these people to the table and have produced a report. And this is an extension of bringing, hopefully, more people from the community colleges to the table so that we can get a collaborative effort in addressing this issue. I want to thank you for hearing this bill, and I think there are some others that are going to be speaking.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kathleen Potempa, Vice President and Dean, Oregon Health and Science University School of Nursing. OHSU is pleased to support House Bill 3603 and the amendments that will be introduced at this hearing. It has been well documented by a study funded by the Northwest Health Foundation and other studies. The nurse shortage in Oregon is severe, and it is growing. While this shortage encompasses virtually every health sector in Oregon, including hospitals, critical and specialty care units, long-term care agencies, public health departments, rural area hospitals are especially hard hit, and indeed schools of nursing. The negative impact of the current shortage on access to health care, including emergency services, and on the quality of health care is severe. The Oregon Nursing Leadership Council estimates that the state needs to double the number of nursing graduates per year just to maintain the current number of licensed RNs. You will have distributed to you the graph which indicates the numbers of the shortage figures that have been produced by the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council. I bring to you a testimony of Dr. Christine Tanner. She's unable to be here. She was the principal investigator of the study, which Landmark study study which documented our severe shortage in the state. I also bring to you testimony of two students, one as far away as Lake Dew, to indicate the what important assets that nursing education has for their future and the importance of passing this bill. I think I want to emphasize again what Representative Mons Anderson said in terms of the effect of this not only on health care and the benefits to citizens, but on the benefits to the economy. Every nurse that's educated is a citizen who will have predictable work and a lifelong career that will be productive and beneficial to society. Thank you.
Brian.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian DeLeishman. I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association, but I've also been given the blessing of indicating a Me Too for the Oregon Nurse Leadership Council. Susan King was supposed to be the one presenting the testimony this morning, and she would do a much more eloquent job of reading her testimony. I'm not going to do that. I'll try and summarize some of the key points. But let me just echo some of the things that we said in 3011, 3012, and what Dr. Potempa has said to this point. We are in a very severe nursing shortage in the state. And I used to chuckle at lobbyists when I was a fresh pup lobbyist back in the late 70s when they'd say, well, let me take you back and tell you what happened years ago. And I used to sit in the back of the room and snicker. Well, now I find myself as one of those lobbyists that's been here forever, been in the building since 1977. When we were going through a somewhat severe recession in the early 80s, obviously, we had, I think, three special sessions during that time period, and continuously came back and said, okay, we've got to cut some more in budgets. And the Oregon Health Sciences University itself was not exempt from those cuts. And what they did at that time was go back and cut across programs. And up to that point, there was approximately 200 students per class in RN. Per class in their four-year program. So in essence, they cut that in about half at that point. So we cut the potential of turning out an additional 100 students per class over a four-year period of time. Those dollars have never been restored. And I think you're seeing right now what cuts on the short-sighted side of it. Obviously, we need to deal with budget shortfalls, but the very, very dramatic impact that they have long-term. And so I would, again, caution you as you go through not only specific to nursing education, but you look at when programs are cut, what both the short and long-term impacts are, because if we have those additional 100 students per class just in that one program that were being turned out since the 80s, we would not be in as bad a fix as we are in this state with the shortage. With that, let me try and summarize Susan's testimony. Obviously, the Oregon Nurses Association is pleased to support this bill. It's the counterpart to 800, as you've heard, with the Dash 1 amendments. You've heard about the projections. We're looking at about, 2,600 short by 2005 in the state. The numbers that I've seen is about 2010. I think we're between 8,000 and 9,000 short. On by 2020, approximately 16,000 short. If you could put that in perspective of the number of nurses we have in the state, they're licensed by the Board of Nursing, I think we're roughly in the upper 30,000s right now. That's a pretty substantial number. I mean, we're talking major, major gaps in the provision of healthcare services. Over the last 3 years, the ONLC has developed and is implementing a plan to address the nursing shortage. This plan incorporates both recruitment and retention goals, and the activities are equally important to the ultimate success. Member organizations within the council have worked closely with the congressional delegation. You heard about that. The possibility of some federal dollars coming down, although this money, we're not expecting money. It would be delightful if the state could put some money into this program. We are, in fact, trying to set up a framework here that if some federal dollars come down, we can funnel those through. And we also want to emphasize that there are private dollars available. There are some private-public partnerships that are a high priority here, and I think we want to set up the framework so that we can accept those dollars and have this skeletal framework for it. 3603 does two important things. First, establishes the grant program whereby the nursing programs can participate in the development of infrastructure, preparation of additional nursing faculty members, creation of materials for new teaching, learning methodologies, and coordination of student clinical experiences, like you heard. The grant program will be directed by the Oregon Nurse Shortage Coalition Committee, which will be composed of the same organizations that have already bought in and really brought the plan to you in the first place. And it is very comprehensive. It's all of the folks that have an interest, whether it's the people at OHSU, community colleges, the Oregon Nurses Association, the nurse educators, it's across the board. So what we attempted to do with the ONLC in setting up this program is get a buy-in by everyone that has a stake in nursing in the state, whether it's the provision of the educational opportunities or it's the consumer of the product itself. And with that, I'll end my testimony and answer any questions. Thank you.
For the record, I'm Jill Bell with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and I'm bringing testimony today for two organizations. One is the hospitals, and the other one is for the Northwest Organization of Nurse Executives. Those are the hospital nursing executives, and they are a member of the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council. The lady who provided the testimony is Nancy Connell, and she's Vice President of Patient Care Services at Barry Hospital, and she is also the President-elect for Northwest One and their representative on the ONLC. And she basically says that Oregon's nursing executives wholeheartedly support House Bill 3603. They feel that even though there are not necessarily state resources to fund the program at this time, that it will be both an encouragement and an acknowledgement of what ONLC has already accomplished, as well as a means for them to move forward and accomplish the goals. And she specifically outlines two of the goals that were in the ONLC report. One of them is to double the enrollment in Oregon nursing programs by 2004, and the other one is to redesign nursing education so that nurses can provide continue to provide excellent care for the changing needs of Oregonians. On behalf of the Hospital Association, I would just like to say that we also support this bill. We have been very supportive of the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council and of all of the efforts that they have put forth on a voluntary basis. I think that needs to be stated, that all of this work that has been done by the nursing community has been done by them on a voluntary basis to address this shortage. And we believe that this will be very helpful for them to move forward and to meet the goals that they have outlined and to provide nurses for the populations in Oregon in the future. Thank you.
Any questions?
One question.
It's your bill. How can you have questions?
There was a question regarding the amount of cap. OHSU is actually the fiscal agent, and we went back and forth as to who should be the entity that gets money when we get any. And people were addressing the administrative fees, and we had capped it at 5%. And say you get $7 million and cap it at 5%, would you still take 5%, or would there... I guess that's to be blunt.
We'd be delighted to have that dilemma to think about.
Yes.
The intention was to keep the overhead very low and to really direct it at what is actually required to run the process, manage the process of grant review and distribution. So we would, of course, look at that and make sure it's appropriate to the amount of grants that we have and what's actually required.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. What is the competitive value of wages for nurses here as composed to neighboring states? Are we competitive?
Can you speak to that? Maybe Brian knows that.
You're Brian. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, my understanding, and I can go back, I will actually ask our economic and general welfare staff at the ONA, the specific question, but it's my understanding that we're very competitive with Washington and California. I do not have specific information on Idaho. I would be a little surprised if they were the same as those that trio.
Are we doing anything like the our competitive states in education, where we're actually recruiting, heavily recruiting from California and lifestyle and bringing nurses here? If we're competitive, I would think that you could kickstart the employment fairly rapidly by encouraging people to come up here.
Why don't I just say that the nurse shortage is not just in Oregon. It's a national phenomenon. And all border states are in severe shortage, just like Oregon. I would also say that most of our graduates from Oregon stay in Oregon.
A follow-up.
If I may actually follow up on that question, too, Representative Cruz, Chair Cruz, and Representative Anderson, there's kind of been this, because it is a nationwide shortage, there has been I would call it a gentleman's agreement, but that you don't steal from other places that are experiencing the exact same problem that you have, whether that's within states or whether that's within other countries in the world. So each of us is obviously struggling with the nursing shortage. That's the nationwide solution, obviously, was the companion bill to this that Senator Gordon Smith was very helpful in getting passed, because he recognized that this is in all the states. But it's an interesting question. It was one of the first things that I would have said is, okay, are we competitive? Is that the reason why we have a shortage in the state? Is there any ability to move people in, move people out to other states? Obviously, we've looked at all of that, and there's the base philosophy is that you don't steal from other states, but yes, we are competitive with Washington and California.
Would you pass that on to the California Teachers Association? We do have a gentlemanly agreement.
Mr. Chair. Address that as well. Joe Bell at the Hospital Association. Representative Anderson, I know that while we probably in philosophy agree with Brian's comments that we don't steal from others, I do know that probably about 6 months ago, a group of the hospitals in the Portland area put together an ad campaign that they've been putting in nursing publications across the country, talking about the grass being greener here. I think that has generated also some interest on the part of some of the rural facilities in the state to do something similar. I'm not sure that they have done that yet, but obviously in an effort to tell people it's a nice place to live.
And didn't we poach nurses from other places in the country when OHSU had the strike?
That's a very different kind of process. Those are called traveler nurses, and they specifically travel around the country and beyond for short periods of time.
And poaching is not a very nice word. So. Yeah, Representative Morris.
I think, too, we have to realize that the reason this bill's coming forward is we don't have the capacity in any of the nursing programs to train more nurses. And I think Kate could say how many nurses they take and how many applications, and the same with the community colleges as well as the universities. There's far more applicants than slots. And this would hopefully expand that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to speak to that. The Oregon Health and Science University alone, as one four-campus system, had over 800 applications for this fall. We're only able to accept a fraction, just over 150 of those statewide. The applicants are highly competitive individuals who would be able to fit into any program in the state, including ours, had we had the resources to admit them. And I hear from my colleagues that that's a similar situation with virtually all programs in the state.
If I may, Mr. Chair, maybe I just pipe in additionally. It is not a matter that we don't have enough applicants. The applicants, we have substantial, very, very qualified applicants. I can attest to that. My niece is trying to get into nursing school. She was basically a 4.0 student all the way through high school. And she is still shopping around. She, in at least one of the programs she's looking at for next fall, has not been accepted to this point. She's been out of high school about 3 or 4 years, taking some community college programs and waiting her time to get into the program. So we have this volume of folks out there if we just have the capacity.
Representative Cruz, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Terry Johansson, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I had accepted that someone else from the colleges would speak to you today in support of this bill, but since someone must have been delayed, I just want to let you know that the community colleges have been at the table with Representative Mona Sanderson and Alice Nelson working hard on this bill. When Senate Bill 800 came up for a public hearing, we had Vice President Liz Goulard from Chemeketa to bring testimony of support from the community colleges. So just wanted to let you know that all the sectors have worked hard on this, are at the table, and are very interested in your support and passage of this bill.
Any further questions? Thank you all very much. Vote for Mona Sanderson.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3603.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 3603. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, the dash one amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3603 be moved to the floor with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves House Bill 3603 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion, Representative Dalto?
Just a question. So what happens? It gets sent to the floor, and then from the floor it's re-referred?
What happens is we pass it out of this committee, it goes to the Speaker's office, and then it's sent to Ways and Means by prior reference. So I've had... Over the years, I have kind of short-circuited the dialogue, but Representative Tomei has corrected me, and so I'm going to continue to do this convoluted thing that makes no sense to me, but that's the way it's supposed to be done. So, any other questions?
No, thank you.
Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 3603, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. We'll close the work session on 3603 and open the work session on 3574.
We have a video. Kathy Britton is doing a teleconference. There we go.
Oh, wow.
I'm Representative Lori Mona Sanderson from District 50 of Gresham, and basically the idea for this bill comes from the Interim Task Force on Healthcare Personnel, as well as the Governor's Workforce Investment, and I say Act, but Board. And I want to say that we have forgotten to mention that we've had some major changes in how these bills are in their final form, and that's because we have actually brought in the governor's office also to make sure that he's on board, and he had some ideas and changes that needed to happen. I want to bring to your attention that the original when we began working on 3574, we realized that what we had produced did not really take into account what was already happening with telehealth and education technology. And we've met a couple of times with partners from different telecommunication fields and decided the original bill, we just forget what the original bill says and look at your dash one amendments, because basically it's a gut and stuff. And we want to emphasize the Oregon Telecommunication Coordinating Council. They've been in existence for 12 years, but we're still waiting to have a real a
product come out of the group. They have a lot of ideas, but they haven't really been given any direction from us. And we felt, those of us meeting with OTCC, Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, that let's put the focus on healthcare. We know the jobs are there. And what we want the outcome to be a curriculum developed as support for teachers utilizing healthcare technologies. So hopefully, with telecommunication education and distance learning, we're going to be encouraging more programs and curriculum to be available to more people statewide. With the critical shortage of our healthcare personnel, it really is important that we get on board. Just to let you know, right now, I have a list of healthcare or occupations. We need nurses aides and orderlies in attendance, and they're short-term on-the-job training. You don't need a degree for that, and their annual salary starts at $19,320. We need pharmacist assistants. Again, you don't need a degree for that. It's only short-term on-the-job training. $24,106 is their beginning salary. We need electrocardiograph technicians. Again, moderate term on-the-job training, no degree required. They start out about $28,000. We need medical assistants, physical therapy assistants. We need LPNs, they need a little bit more education. They need community college training. They start out at $32,800 a year. We jump up to registered nurses, and they need their associate degree, or they can get their bachelor's degree. Either way, they start out right around $49,200 a year. Radiation therapists, you only need an associate degree. They start out at $45,400 a year. A nuclear medicine technologist, again, you only need an associate degree for that, $44,600. A dental hygienist, again, only a associate degree. They start out with at $65,257. So if you have kids, becoming a dental hygienist is a great way to go. And pharmacists, you need a bachelor's, and they start out at $67,000. So as you can see, we have critical shortages in all of those occupations that I listed. And I won't go through the supply that we need, but we need over 2,500 nurses, aides, orderlies, and attendants, and we certainly need, I forget what Kate said on the nursing shortage. So I think what I'll do is turn this over to Joe Bell and Terry, but this is really an exciting area. Everyone is focusing on, biotechnology and bringing the bio industry into Oregon, et cetera. We have an industry right now that has high-paying jobs, and we need to develop that. Yes, it's important for us to bring new industry into Oregon, but let's also promote healthcare industry, a huge industry in the state that can provide so many jobs right now. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Seems to me like we have a thank you, Mr. Chair. Like we have a communication problem. I've got hundreds of people in the Illinois Valley who've been put out of work that could easily fill in some of these lower, lesser required educational situations, and would be happy with $24,000 a year. How do we get people in touch?
Well, this is what this bill is going to try to do, is to share resources and technology, and everyone has to be on the same page. The community colleges, the hospitals, our education system, basically even our high schools, our K-12, needs to start being able to share resources so that the trainings can start in the high schools, in the community college, and sharing resources, because we don't always have people who can, say, teach anatomy and physiology, and you only have a few students. Well, let's start sharing our resources. Let's say OHSU or, say, Chemeketa Community College has a class. Well, why can't someone in Klamath?
Illinois Valley.
Take this course to start getting some of that training. So that's the idea of this concert.
Follow up?
Yes.
There's no provision in this bill for those who refuse to take those kind of training positions.
That's not complicated. That Go ahead, Joe.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, once again, for the record, I'm Jill Bell, Director of Legislative Support Services for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And one of the things in all of the testimony that I've provided before you today on workforce issues that I haven't said is that workforce development is one of probably the three priorities that our association has. So we've been very interested in following what has been going on as far as the reports. We've been very active and supportive in the Oregon Nursing Leadership report and working with them as we were requested. We also had individuals participate on the Governor's Workforce Investment Board under the Healthcare Sector Employment Initiative, and we also had an appointed member to the last session's House Bill 3353 Legislative Interim Task Force. And one of the things that sort of kept bubbling to the top as we watched these and watch these various reports come to fruition and talk to the various people that were involved was the fact that we really needed to stretch our resources, and that one of the ways that we can do that now with modern technologies is through distance learning. It's interesting that you asked about the individuals in your community, Representative Anderson, talking about what they need. One of the situations that we have is we have a very strong need for rad techs in this state. But we may only need one in Lakeview and one in LeGrand and one in Grants Pass. And that is not one technician is not enough to start a whole program for. But if the community college in Lynn Benton, which is in Albany, has a program going, and if they could provide that education via distance training to that one individual or two individuals in those outlying areas, then that community college and the whole state doesn't have to duplicate the resources to provide that education. And in working with the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, that is their goal. Their mission is to make sure that there is broadband technology around the state, and that it is being used to assist the state and grow its economy and bring equity to all the areas of the state to provide jobs and quality living. So we feel that while we are completely changing the bill, we're not completely changing the bill, we're just completely changing who's doing it. We really feel that it is part of their mission and that it is a good fit for them to be working with the education and healthcare communities to make sure that the distance learning technologies that are already there are being used to assist us in educating healthcare workforce employees. So thank you very much.
Representative Anderson.
Yes, just to piggyback on something you said there, Rogue Community College had a wonderful motorcycle technician course. It's been cut lately. But they sent people all over the state and the nation because it was a good program. And that's, I think, what we have to be looking for, that the expertise may be in one community or on distance learning in one community, but people are going to have to move out to where the jobs are.
Right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Terry Johansson, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. As you've heard in all the testimony today, I think that many organizations and groups have been preparing recommendations and plans around how Oregon might address the health occupations shortages. Almost without exception, every one of those plans and every one of those recommendations has an element in it about using distance and alternative delivery strategies to enhance the capacity of our education programs to deliver education across the state. Every sector, from the high schools to the community colleges to the university system, have received kind of instructions from all the people who have studied this to get on the ball and do this by distance. This bill would task the Telecommunications Coordinating Council and its subcommittees to work with the healthcare education providers to coordinate their efforts and assure that the cross-sector, cross-institution communication is there so that the efforts for both infrastructure and program have the players talking to each other in a kind of a coordinated approach at this. The community colleges have come together to craft their Community College Healthcare Action Plan, which we have provided for you today. And if you have a chance to look at it, you will see that it is, in fact, a plan that the colleges, 16 of the 17 colleges so far, are participating in to expand their capacity by the use of distance and alternative delivery. We have, the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development has provided, through some federal funds, through our Carl Perkins Professional Technical federal dollars, some preliminary funding to implement the Community College Healthcare Action Plan. And in fact, this very week, the team is forming up to begin phase one, which is to bring the prerequisites for healthcare programs into a format to be delivered by distance delivery across the state. So obviously, we are very interested and very committed to any effort that causes these efforts to be coordinated in some way. I can think of nothing worse than to have several trains start out on parallel tracks that aren't communicating and coordinating the efforts to make sure that our investments, both human and infrastructure and fiscal, all line up so that we are best leveraging the efforts of all the sectors and all of the employer networks to do this in some kind of coordinated way. So I think that this bill is one that causes the Telecommunication Coordinating Council to task its education and healthcare subcommittees to pay some attention to that task. And personally, I appreciate that. Thank you. I'll be glad to take questions. Yes.
Thank you, Chairman Cruz and members of the committee. Thank you for letting me come to you in this way today. I hope that this helps reinforce and demonstrate the intent of the bill and what we're trying to accomplish. For the record, my name is Kathy Britton. I own RodeoNet Consulting here in La Grande, Oregon, but I'm coming to you today as Chair of the Healthcare Committee for the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council and as President of the Oregon Telehealth Alliance. I'd like to express my support of this bill as it has been reincarnated. We are very supportive of the collaborative planning process between and among education and healthcare providers for the purpose of creating what we call a network of networks. This network would provide a means for the delivery not only of healthcare education, but for K-12 classes, university coursework, library services, and healthcare delivery, and especially into our rural areas. Many of us, out of necessity, when we started, created our own networks. We needed specific levels of bandwidth. We had specific populations that needed to be served. We required specific levels of security. And unlike other states, Oregon's a little bit unique in that we didn't establish a telecommunications system based on a hub-and-spoke network. So there is no centralized control of telecommunications within the state of Oregon. There are some real benefits to that approach in that we've created several robust networks that reach many areas that would not have been reached in the early stages of a hub-and-spoke system, and we've been able to apply money and for investment from different areas for the build-out of those networks, including grant funding. In addition, there's a tremendous sense of ownership and commitment to these networks. Now, having said that, the sense of ownership and commitment to individual networks also results in sort of a tunnel vision, or as we at the OTCC call it, siloing to network development and use. We're often busy developing our own networks to our individual specifications, and we don't tend to look up and see what's happening around us. And I think that was one of the original drivers behind the creation of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. We found that some networks operate to different standards, making them unable to work together. And it wasn't intentional. It was just that at the time, that was what was available and was most cost beneficial. We have differing requirements for security, with health care being the most stringent, at least in regulation. And there were legal barriers, some of which are just perceived and others which are actual, which have made it difficult to consider the combination of networks for co-use. We are also considering what the funding barriers would be and how do we pay for upgrades to systems to make them interoperable? How do we pay for scheduling such a behemoth network? As Representative Monica Anderson mentioned, the healthcare networks have been coming together for many years to discuss how their networks could interact, and they have solved some tremendously difficult problems, but only within the healthcare sector. In the past year, only within the education sector, in the past year, the healthcare sector has done the same under the auspices of the Oregon Telehealth Alliance. And in December of 2001, the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, which was created by the last legislative session under Senate Bill 765, began working on how we could deal with issues of collaboration and partnership among various communities of interest. It's sort of like herding cats. Unfortunately and unintentionally, when we created HDR 5, when it came out of Ledge Council, it indicated that DAS would develop an overarching plan. And as you might suspect, no one, including DAS, was in favor of that idea. At the same time, Senator Nelson and Alice and Representative Monis Anderson approached the OTCC. At that time, we were just in a discussion about how we might create an interoperable system of networks that would specifically benefit healthcare education. And taking that discussion back to the council, we saw this as an opportunity to take advantage of the efforts that were already underway, both in healthcare and in education, and to use this kind of unique synergy to create a collaborative. Senator Nelson and Alice and Representative Monis Anderson agreed to convene some education healthcare summit meetings to discuss this, and we had a huge turnout. People were very, very interested in how this might work. We've met twice, and we've committed to meeting on a regular basis, and we are determined to come up with resolutions to technological, political, legal, and funding barriers, and to take advantage of the application opportunities that such a collaborative would create. We also agreed that we didn't want to form another commission or a council or any kind of oversight group, and thanks to Representative Monis Anderson's insight, she made the suggestion that the group should just become a committee of OTCC because that was part of our mission. And what we found was that we were very agreeable to doing that, but we are sunsetted as of December 31st, 2003. So if we are to continue to do this, we must be, the sunset date must be pushed forward. So I'm here today to support this legislation, to support the concept behind creating a network that can provide healthcare education to all areas of the state, and also to benefit ultimately all Oregonians. So thank you for your consideration, and I'll take questions.
Any questions?
Isn't this awesome to be able to see you in LeGrand, and this is what can happen with distance learning.
Yeah. Kathy, I want to thank you very much for sharing part of your morning with us. I think this committee has been exposed to more of this technology than any other committee in the building this session, and I think it's great. So thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll wait just a minute for Representative Monis Anderson to rejoin us so that she can. And just for clarification, the Dash 1 is a pure gut and stuff. So I'd entertain a motion on the Dash 1 amendment.
Thank you. Before I ask that, because it's a total gut and stuff now and we're not forming a new committee, can you send this to Legislative Physical to see if it actually needs to go to Ways and Means?
We can do that.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3574.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3574. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, the Dash 1 amendment is adopted, and I think we will send this one also down to LFO to get a new read on this to see if indeed the referral can be rescinded. Pardon me? And we will bring it also back up on Wednesday. We should have a read from LFO by then. So with that, I'm going to close the work session on 3574, open a work session on House Bill 3577. One thing I will say, committee, as Representative Mona Sanderson is getting her exercise this morning.
I need it.
Healthy heart.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Lori Mona Sanderson, State Representative from District 50, which is Gresham. And this bill comes to you from recommendations made, actually, by the Governor's Workforce Report and the Interim Task Force on Healthcare Personnel. And I actually, the idea, I went to the Hospital Association. I said, what can we do to help hospitals? And we were brainstorming, and I kept thinking about this wonderful cultural trust fund that Representative Westland has pursued. And I said, what?
Say that again.
So what I was saying, why can't we do this for healthcare? Healthcare actually, with more dollars available, we could actually maybe have a lot of more high-paying jobs putting money back into our system so we would have revenue to deal with, taking some care of some of the public education and healthcare needs and public safety needs that we have. But basically, the movement behind this bill is to gather public, private, individual, and organization funds to assist in meeting the healthcare workforce needs. It requires no state general funds, and it provides a tax credit then for those who would wish to participate. We've already talked about the immediate long-term critical shortage in healthcare workforce, and I'm not going to go into much detail about that because we've covered it, but I just want you to know that this is an idea that whose primary purpose will allow creation and expansion of the healthcare workforce education program and actually increase access to education for much of our needed healthcare personnel. And I'll let Joe Bell go more into the details of this. Thanks.
Once again, Jill Bell, the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for listening to all of these bills today. As I said previously, healthcare workforce is one of our major goals to be dealing with in the hospital associations. The fund is as Representative Mona Sanderson said, recommendations from both the Governor's Workforce Investment Board Healthcare Sector Initiative Report as well as the legislative report. And it will be a mechanism for healthcare industry partners and other interested parties to pool their dollars together to be able to fund statewide efforts. Distance learning is a good example, providing education for needed workforce individuals will also be part of it. I also want to indicate that the intent of this is not to be just limited to workforce that would be applicable to hospitals. The Governor's Workforce Investment Board and the Health and the Legislative Task Force all address much broader issues than just those in healthcare, including the needs in the dental community, long-term care, and home health, and assisted living. And all of those areas, I think, need to be addressed. And this fund would not be limited to any one sector for use of the dollars. It also would not be limited to just community college or higher ed. It would also be available to be used for healthcare education, workforce development in high schools, and in technical programs as well. So we think it's a very broad rush approach, and we think it should benefit the state of Oregon. One of the things that we've talked about off and on all day is the economic impact. And when we had a hearing a week or so ago on HJR 48, and Representative Mona Sanderson brought forth some statistics that we had developed regarding the just the amount of lost salary that we have in the state right now. I pulled that up, and she reported that that was $76.4 million, and that was the case. But when I looked back through my file on that, actually that was only part of what the our calculation was. That reflected 11 out of over 200 potential positions in hospitals, the top 11 with the highest vacancy rates, and it only reflected 30 of the 63 hospitals reporting. So I think we can feel very comfortable in doubling that, which is $153 million in healthcare wages that are just waiting to be positions that are waiting to be filled in hospitals alone. If you went to any other segments of the healthcare industry, I'm sure that you could find similar totals of dollars that would be able to be brought into the Oregon economy right now at a time when we really need an assistance. So we would appreciate your support of this bill, and hopefully we can get the bill passed and begin collecting funds to further workforce education.
Any questions? Representative Anderson.
Yes, Representative Mona Sanderson, did I hear you say that this would be a tax credit?
Yes.
Or a tax deduction?
Credit.
Tax credit. It appears to me I saw a plan called Oregon Rising that was asking to get rid of a lot of tax credits.
Yes.
And I'm hearing from countless people on the education side saying, get rid of all the tax credits so that we can...
You're right, and I think that is something that the legislature needs to deal with. And in fact, I think the Revenue Committee is taking a look at all tax credits right now and coming up with a plan to keep some and get rid of others. So you're right.
I would certainly, you know, I'm all in favor of philanthropy, and tax deductions would be a good start, I would think, rather than a full credit one-on-one.
Mr. Chair, may I address mm-hmm. that? Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, actually, I talked, the bill doesn't start the tax credit until the 2004. And taking that into consideration, we really didn't want to be impacting this this fiscal year or this fiscal biennium if we could avoid that. But in talking with Representative Shetterly, he indicated that it really would make little difference whether we extended the date to January 2005, because they would still be reviewing them, and it would be one of the ones that they would review. We specifically asked him if he would prefer, or if he thought it would be better for us to drop that, and he didn't feel that the impact would be substantial, and that he did think that it was a for a good cause, and that it could be part of the discussion on which tax credits would go forward and which would not.
Representative Wesson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my asthma is really bad. I don't know. It only happens when I sit in this committee, you know, either next to you, Lori, but you're not there, so it must be because I'm sitting next to, you know, Representative Cruz. So, anyway, I apologize if I stutter through this. Tax credits are a very integral part of tax philosophy and tax legislation in this state, and whether it's from home interest mortgage deductions or personal property tax exemptions for businesses. You know, these are targeted, well thought out, long contemplated changes to our tax code, which I think now have a fairly bright light shown on them as a potential source of revenue. So in terms of allowing citizens to get a credit and target part of the money they pay to a given organization, effort, entity, or part of state government, I think it's a very valid methodology and mechanism that allows money that would be paid anyway to go to a specific segment of Oregon government. And I do agree that they should be reviewed, that this is something during this economic climate that causes further review. But overall, it's a very integral part of what we do as a state, what every state does, what indeed the federal government has used from time to time as part of their overall tax policy. So I say that, I think, pretty much primarily in response to Representative Anderson's concerns. I think all of us are concerned. I know you are too, Lori, that in this particular time we've got to be very judicious in our use of tax credits.
And follow-up to that also, I take a look at, you know, what the papers have been saying about PGE only paying $10 to the state of Oregon as part of their income tax or corporate tax. But I also take a look at PGE of the thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that they give through their foundation also, which have really helped our community. So I think we sort of have to take these tax credits, as Representative Westland has said, in perspective, and which ones are good and which ones maybe we can have a moratorium on. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Representative Mona Sanderson.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 3577.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 3577. Is there any discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote for this bill with reserving the right to change my vote on the floor.
Okay, this goes to Ways and Means. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I did have a clarification why this would go to Ways and Means rather than revenue.
Because I think there's more of a Ways and Means impact than revenue impact at this point in time.
There is.
I mean, the revenue impact is a future impact. So.
This would be establishing a health care workforce board.
Well, it's It's establishing something to administer funds, and that's the Ways and Means sort of thing. Yeah, and you know, Ways and Means, if they want, could refer it to revenue, but judging on Joe Bell's testimony, I would say that the Revenue Committee is aware of it, the revenue impact is more in the following biennium, not the one in front of us, so...
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill.
Hang on. Any other discussion on the dash one amendment? Any objections to the dash one amendment? Seeing none, dash one amendment is adopted. Now.
Now, I'd like to move House Bill 3577 to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due process recommendation.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves House Bill 3577 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
Mr. Chair, I'm very supportive of the concept. I guess I'm just very concerned about our financial situation in the state. And a $500 credit, not a deduction, as Representative Anderson pointed out, plus the corporation can deduct the credit, $2,500, I just think that is just too much. If it were even a half credit that one could deduct, take a 50% credit, I think I could support it more. But I'm just really concerned, and I'm sorry I will not be able to support this bill.
Okay. I'd just like to point out that, number one, you don't have to do the whole thing, and number two, what this is in effect doing is allowing people to direct some of their taxes to a specific area, which I wish we could do more of that personally. It might leave some things unfunded, but
That's my concern.
Well, and I understand, and anyway. Any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative
Anderson. Aye.
Representative
Barker. Excused.
Representative
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3577 having received the constitutional majority is declared passed. Close work session on House Bill 3577, and we are adjourned. You did well.